As was foretold, it's Big News Wednesday. And both the big news and the good news keeps on giving. Interesting new DOJ filing that we're gonna dive into, revealing some of the actual documents that Donald Trump stole from the White House, as well as a little bit more granular information about how he tried to evade detection. So that's gonna be spicy too. Joining me to discuss, as always on Big News Wednesday, JR Jackson. How's it going? But you're muted. We're full of tech problems today.
No, I'm sorry. I'm all over the place because my camera got shifted. Just from me leaving after my show to come into yours, as long as you guys can hear me, I can sit over here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah.
It's Big News Wednesday. What's going on, John?
It's, you know, the news is going on. Not only those DOJ filings that we talked about, we've got some updates on right wingers who had really big things to say about why you shouldn't be mean to Trump, now trying to backtrack. Because it turns out that they were sort of advocating for violence. We're gonna analyze that. Oh, we're gonna be running. Yesterday, I got a chance to talk with Chris Smalls about Amazon unionization, as well as sort of the labor movement more broadly. We're gonna be playing that just a little bit later, actually, for our live audience. We got DeSantis being made to look like a fool, death threats, Donald Trump looking ridiculous. We got a lot of fun stuff. We've got airdropped nudes coming to you live on the Damage Report and more. So everyone, before all of that, hit the like button, share the stream if you haven't already. And you can send us comments, tweets, super chats and all that. And JR and I will respond as we go. But with all that said, JR, are you ready to start the show?
I think so.
Okay. Well, I think you're gonna be familiar with this first story, but let's jump into it. A new filing by the DOJ revealed some of the documents that Donald Trump had stolen from the government and brought to Mar-a-Lago. Let's take a look at this photo, and you're gonna see that the investigators raiding Mar-a-Lago apparently made the weird decision to take some of the documents, and you can see in there a number of different classified documents, and sort of lay them out on the gaudy floor to take a photo of. And that is pretty amazing. So normally what would happen in a situation like this is the FBI would take a photo of the actual documents pre being taken. So wherever they were being held, you know, in normal places like Trump's desk or a storage closet or something. Or they would take all of the evidence, they would bring it back to wherever it's going to be held, lay it all out and take a photo of it there. Doing it at Mar-a-Lago is an interesting choice, but that's what they did. And they did reveal quite a bit in it. You see documents bearing markings of top secret, secret, sensitive, compartmented information, one of the highest classifications there. You can't actually read the documents. They were smart enough to white those out. But you also get to see, because of their choice, a box of framed items, including a 2019 Time magazine cover depicting the then Democratic presidential field vying to defeat Trump. And I get why Trump would want that. He's a history buff. Wouldn't he want to catalog every step along the way towards the second election where America rejected him? So I appreciate that as an academic myself. And we're gonna have far more coming out of this, including the more damning information about obstruction. But I wanna be fair to Donald Trump for some reason and give you his response to these pictures coming out. He truthed, "Terrible the way the FBI during the raid of Mar-a-Lago threw documents haphazardly all over the floor, perhaps pretending it was me that did it, and then started taking pictures of them for the public to see. Thought they wanted to keep them capital S secret. Lucky I, capital D, declassified." And so he's a very witty, quick guy. Because if you declare that you've declassified on Truth Social months and months after stealing the documents, then that's legit. That is actually that's not at all. You can't just say that. Man, he could have honestly tried to do it. Like, if he really wanted to have these documents, he could have tried to go through the actual procedure to declassify them, and maybe he would have avoided some of the trouble. Not all of it, of course, because many of those documents he stole from the government, he cannot declassify. It is not up to him to do so. Never forget that. But he was so lazy. It's the combination of corruption and laziness that is so unique to Donald Trump, really biting him in the ass now, JR.
Absolutely. This is the thing. Donald Trump was asking for all this extra information. He was asking for the affidavit to be revealed. He was asking for the search warrant to be revealed. He was asking for this special person to come in and do all this stuff. And he keeps getting more information revealed. And he keeps being unhappy about that information being revealed. I'm not sure if he understands this, but there's this guy. Someone should tell Donald Trump. This guy, his name is Donald. And he's been sabotaging you. consistently over and over and over again. So yeah, and also the perhaps, he's perhaps pretending that I had strewn all of these documents all over the floor as if that's an irresponsible thing. Because in reality, if you pay attention, you guys, is what Trump is trying to tell his supporters, I didn't throw those things all over the floor. I just had them in an unlocked closet. I had just had them in my desk. Only had them in the bathroom on the shelf. That's all, not on the floor. Yeah. Please.
Yeah, so I don't know if you are big on procedurals, but sometimes I'll watch those shows where like detectives will like try to track down someone who did like a big bank robbery or something. And they'll show up to the guy's place and they'll find a bunch of money. But if it wasn't strewn about on the floor, then was it really a crime? I mean, sure, he stole millions, but he had it neatly piled with little elastic bands around each one. It was so organized that it would seem gauche to lock him up. No, although I didn't care enough about this to actually pull the tweets, but there's one of these like nut job commentators that loves Trump who was like, they're giving the impression, like agreeing with Trump, they're giving the impression that he kept them on the floor. Dude, that's not what they're doing, and nobody cares. Get a better narrative, seriously. And honestly, there's a better narrative waiting. He is, and there's nothing in his truth that says anything about the documents that you saw there was wrong, except that they were on the floor. He definitely had them, he took them. And you can see on them, they say secret, NCI, compartment. Like, so he's admitting it. You can't have those. That is a crime. It is in fact many crimes. You can count the pieces of paper if you'd like to figure out how many crimes. But they have a better defense. It's a lie, but it's better. And you might recall, they were running with it initially. Christina Bob, the crazy Trump lawyer, was early on, this is August 9th, suggesting that the FBI may have planted evidence in Mar-a-Lago. Trump initially was sort of running with that a bit. The right loved this idea because it's non-falsifiable. You could just say that they planted it and there's literally no way to prove that they haven't. And it is sort of plausible because the FBI historically is really bad. So why not just say that all the documents on the floor, I never saw those. Those weren't my documents. Those are big fraudulent dumps. Instead, they're admitting to it. They have just admitted to the crime.
They don't know how not to. You know why? Because Christina Bob is, you guys should know this. I think everybody knows this. She was an OAN host before she was Trump's attorney because no one else will work for him because he doesn't pay anyone. And also he screws people over. Let's keep it real. So yeah. Things are strewn across the floor. And then this is not how things usually work. I'm not sure what the end game is. I keep wondering. People call Donald Trump a mobster. He runs his whole life like he's a mob king. Mobsters had plans. Mobsters had ways to evade the law. Mobsters would hide things. Mobsters are like, hey, they're coming for me. Donald Trump was surprised that they came back after Christina Bob signed this document saying that we gave you guys all of the information and all of the documents that we weren't supposed to have here in the first place. And then there was more there.
Yeah.
What was the plan after that?
Are they
going to go, oh, my bad. I think we forgot about the most top secret documents of the entire United States secrets. We just forgot about them. They're in your drawer, but it was just our bad. That was the plan? Yeah. That was this mob king's plan? Bro, Gotti is really upset with you over this.
When they're sending the mob, they're not sending the best. But anyway, but there's so many other aspects of this we got to get into. I understand why people are focusing on the fact that the DOJ has revealed those photos of all the documents Trump stole, the top secret stuff spread out. That is bad. It's evidence of a crime. But honestly, some of what came out in this filing, which by the way, the DOJ filing didn't need to come. It was in response to Donald Trump trying to get this special master, which he doesn't seem like he's gonna get, and taking forever to do the filing. So most of the document analysis had already happened. They're just the worst. But some of what was revealed, I think, might even be more significant because it goes to not just that he committed the crime, but that he knew what he was doing was a crime, which for some reason with rich people is the most important part of a crime. We just get done. If you do the crime, you go to jail. For them, it's all about what's in their mind. So the DOJ said in its filing that it is, quote, evidence that government records were likely concealed and removed from the storage room, the like closet that's come up so much, and that efforts were likely taken to obstruct the government's investigation. They say that the FBI, in a matter of hours, recovered twice as many documents with classification markings as the, quote, diligent search that the former president's counsel and other representatives had weeks to perform calls into serious question the representations made in the June 3rd certification and cast doubt on the extent of cooperation in this matter. So what they're saying is they said they'd cooperated. They clearly didn't. They said they went through all these documents. It says classified in huge letters. You can't miss that. So they clearly were lying. They were not cooperating. That gets to motivation, as well as that some of the documents they found weren't in the storage closet anymore, implying that they had been identified during that search and were then taken out and put somewhere else, which gets to an active attempt to obstruct the investigation. None of this should be necessary. Let's be clear about that. He already committed the crime hundreds of times over. We already know that. We're done with that. We're moving on. But on top of it, he clearly was in the know about the fact that it was a crime, that he was committing, continuing to commit crimes, and was trying to make it impossible for the investigation to catch him. This is just, this should be drop the balloons. We got him. Can we wrap this thing up, JR?
It's so simple, right? Open and shut. It doesn't get any easier than this, right? I guess they want to make sure that all those MAGA folks that Lindsey Graham wants to go riot will have nothing else to complain about. Maybe that's the only thing left here. Because by the way, there was one line in that whole thing when they're talking about the diligent search that his representatives and his counsel conducted in between the two first requests for the documents and then the eventual search and seizure of those documents. They said that they couldn't produce those, but there was that diligent search. Why are you searching for something like this important in someone's residence? Who does know where it is? Who brought it in? Why do you have to search for something in your house? John, if you've got 12 highly classified documents in your house somewhere, do you think your wife has to go, well, I gotta go search for them because I have no idea?
They could be anywhere.
You think she might say, hey, John, they're looking for some documents that you brought. Maybe you can tell me where they are. Instead, yeah, it's a search. Why is it a search? It should be somewhere. And in fact, FBI agents came back later and searched and found them. But the people closest to him couldn't find them, or they didn't want to find them.
Yeah, so let me demonstrate how ridiculous it is. So saying, I searched and I couldn't find it, and it turns out it was in your desk, is the equivalent of like, where are my glasses? I just can't seem to find my glasses. Oh, whoops, senior moment. That's what happened. Except with classified sensitive documents of national importance. Okay, now we obviously think that this is serious. What if a right winger thought it was serious though? Let's jump into this. Coming out of the DOJ's filing that reveals all these documents that Donald Trump stole, I wasn't necessarily expecting that Fox and Friends would come down on the side of this being seriously bad for him. But take a look at this video of Steve Doocy.
Keep in mind, according to the filing, the agents found three classified documents in Donald Trump's desks. What were they doing in the desks? And these are the biggest secrets in the world. If, you know, we have heard that Donald Trump's lawyers went through all the stuff, but how could you go and look at that and not think, you know what, that's probably something I should turn back over?
Those are some good questions, Steve Doocy. I agree. Now, almost immediately after that, the others, especially in this case, Ainsley Earhart, jumped into like, no, but he said that he declassified it. And I know that we've known for a long time that many of the documents he couldn't declassify. And even if he was going to, he had to do actual documentation. He can't just cross his arms and like wriggle his nose. That's not how it works. She knows that, but she's lying for him. But despite that, Steve Doocy then doubles down and hamstrings the argument that Ainsley Earhart had been trying to make in this clip.
Well, ultimately, it comes down to why did he have all that secret stuff at Mar-a-Lago? You know, I know his team has said that they declassified it, but that's news to the agencies that those documents belong to.
News to the agencies. It was news to apparently everybody following Donald Trump just deciding after the fact that he had declassified those things, JR.
It's amazing. Doocy, like, it's one of those things. Remember, I always say, I tell everyone, if you're getting somebody got a political discussion with someone and disagree with you, just ask them to explain the next step. Oh my God, you know, whoever, President Obama was doing this, this, and that. Or really, why? It's who, what, when, where, and why. And then how? How did he do it? Why did he do it? When did he do it? What for? What's the end game? Because they have to have, since they're telling you how everything works, they should have that answer. Steve Doocy is simple-minded enough. He's like, but then why would he have it there? It's a simple question that they won't answer because there's a really easy answer. Because he was stealing them. But the answer they just don't want to reveal. Why did he have them? When did he have them there? Who knew about it? All these simple questions Steve Doocy now has to ask.
Yeah.
And for some reason, other folks that also know those answers just don't want to ask those questions either. It's just how these things work. I'm glad he's asking the burning questions.
Totally. Yeah. No, he's doing it again. Look, it happens every once in a while. Maybe 4 or 5 times a year, Steve Doocy says something reasonable. And look, to be fair, the only reason he can do it is that I guess he's not 100% in love with Donald Trump. That frees him up to say things that are just common sense at this point. And sometimes the others, you know, Kilmeade every once in a while will say something sort of critical, but I feel like he's a little bit more in the tank for Trump. So he has that sort of knee-jerk need to defend him. But when you're freed up, you can acknowledge reality. So for instance, the Drudge Report, which still exists, I checked, they had this on their front page as this news was coming out.
Jesus, ooh, man. The neck morphing on this shot is pretty good.
Yeah, that's well done. Well, good as in like how, you know, maybe the special effects in a good horror movie are good. Like that is what a fully burned corpse would look like. Yes, you did a bang up job. But anyway, I bet Donald Trump, if he had to take one of the two, would choose the orange jumpsuit over whatever that neck is supposed to be. But good job there, Drudge. Anyway, look, I don't think that this is the dam breaking. You'll probably hear people say like, oh God, the right is finally, the walls are closing to something. You hear that a lot. And I don't expect at this point it will ever come. But having some be willing to acknowledge indisputable facts, that's something. And I will take it. Thank you, Steve Doocy.
Yeah, that's my last thought on this. To folks who are still supporting, regular folks who are still supporting Donald Trump, that weren't in the administration, have nothing to benefit from it, that aren't about to be up for some kind of legal issue, and now you're protecting your own ass, whatever it is. What's the worst thing that can happen if the Republican Party distances themselves completely instead of like in partial ways like this and says Donald Trump apparently is a criminal and we're not like him? What happens? They lose the MAGA base. That's who they lose. Those folks, the rabid racists, the folks that are into violence, that are looking to overturn elections, that are fascists. Those are the people that you lose.
Yeah.
If you think you lose that and you can never win again, that says a lot about who you are.
Yeah.
And they refuse to leave them.
Yes, yes. I think you're right. Who you are, but also who you think your base is, or who you think you need your base to be, I guess. Okay, let's jump from one side of this power couple to the other. Melania Trump has been notably silent as more and more evidence has come out that her husband Donald committed so many crimes. Now she did come up initially in the story. You might recall following the raid, Trump put out a message saying, just learned that agents went through the first lady's closets and rummaged through her clothing and personal items. Surprisingly, left area in a relative mess. Wow. I don't know what the relative mess thing means. Is that him implying that she normally has it pretty messy, but this is relatively more messy? Or does he mean that they didn't really make much of a mess relative to normal? Either way, it's weird. Debate amongst yourselves. But he was angry about this, clearly, about the raid and even about them going through her stuff. She, according to 5 different people who spoke to CNN, has really tried to not talk about this, to not get drawn in personally. And there's a few reasons for that, and every one of them is interesting. Here is a quote about her response, not her vocal response, that didn't really exist, but what she was thinking. She cared, but not like he cared. It annoyed her. This is an FBI raid of your home, or supposedly your home, supposedly the place you're supposed to live. They note that it was her invasion of privacy that prompted her to get upset, not the nature of the investigation that sparked the search, or what it meant or might possibly come to mean legally for her husband. So, all told, doesn't really care, not that interested. But to the extent that she does care, it's that they went through her slacks, not that her husband might get locked up over it. or might have details about nuclear defense. That's an interesting little mini hill in this scandal to choose to not even really die on, but like be mildly peeved on.
Man, we might find out who the mole is because she does not care. But also, who knows how close she could have been to all this stuff. She probably distanced herself because she knows how much of a criminal her husband is. And she's like, I'm just going to kind of not know. I was watching this Tim Donaghy doc, this untold, it was on Netflix, this untold documentary about Tim Donaghy, who was a former NBA ref. And he was doing point stuff and he was betting on his games as he was refereeing, all that stuff. He got busted by the FBI. And his wife was like, I had some suspicion something was happening, but I just didn't want to know. So I just stayed away. And I told him, if you're doing something, Timmy, you probably shouldn't do it. And that's all. I feel like she was probably took the route that also Melania was taking. She's like, Donnie, I feel like you're up to something, and I'm just going to stay in my quarters over here and make sure that none of your fingers touch my clothes and also none of your documents get near my jumpsuits, because your orange ones over there are definitely going to be needed later.
Well, and she was apparently pretty confident about that. She apparently was certain that nothing of his would ever be found in her closet or even in her bedroom. Man, two words, her bedroom, so much meaning. It's only a few syllables, a handful of letters, her bedroom. Anyway, she would never allow him to keep his stuff in her room, and he would frankly never ask, says one of the people. Damn. That's not even that weird. My wife has a closet. I feel no need to put anything in there. But I know that if I did, it's not like she'd get mad, nor would she have the grounds to be, because she's taken so much of my clothing that if an extra piece of clothing ended up in there, she was gonna steal it anyway. I'm just getting ahead of the curve, but she apparently has always considered what Donald does to be separate from her. Decisions he makes about his business are his decisions, not hers. And I guess, look, inside of a couple, those are the sorts of choices that you can make. It's just the distance is so far, geographic, like emotional. There's so much distance there. I don't know if she would be the mole, just because to be a mole seems to require some sort of emotional investment. And I don't even think she can get worked up enough to betray him.
Yeah, I said this before earlier this morning. Remember when he first got into office and then suddenly Melania was staying in New York? It was like, she's not going with him to DC. She was there for months at first. And then finally people were ridiculing them so much. She's like, damn it. I thought I could get away with staying away from this guy. The best thing about him winning this election was that I don't have to be around his ass anymore. This continues to get illustrated over and over and over again with their relationship, which again, that's their personal business. But when it comes to then you got documents in the house, maybe it's good that she distanced herself, or maybe she didn't. I don't know. Again, we still haven't found the rat, as Trump and his associates have been calling it.
Yeah.
More speculation.
Well, and the speculation continues. For now, though, we are going to take our first break. When we come back, Biden called Donald Trump and his movement semi-fascist, and the level of crying from the right has been epic. And we're going to dive into one of the best examples of it after this. Okay, with that, we've got a lot of fun news to get to. So let's get ready for this. Ever since Joe Biden referred to the right as semi-fascist, they've been performatively pretending to be offended by that weak sauce comment. And the best example, I think, is Mark Levin. He is going to take the I don't like it and turn it up to like 15. Take a look at this.
The dehumanization of your opponents, which is extraordinarily dangerous. This is what regimes do, totalitarian regimes. They dehumanize their opponents. This is what Biden, again, a street thug, sleazeball politician, that's all he's ever been, it's all he's ever will be. If you're a semi-fascist, you've been dehumanized.
I'm not a human anymore. Because he didn't call you a cockroach. He didn't call you a rat. He didn't call you a virus or a bacteria. There are things people can say about their political enemies that are dehumanizing. You can probably hear them on a regular basis on the Mark Levin show. But semi-fascist from noted street thug Joe Biden, That's not one of them. Like the Markey doth protest too much, but he's gonna go even beyond that. It's not just dehumanizing. Joe Biden is following in a long distinguished line of genocidal dictators. Listen to this.
And all this targeting of Trump, again, to send a signal. Dehumanization is a big deal. And that's what genocidal regimes do. Jews aren't human beings. They're just not. Or at one time, blacks aren't human beings. Some parts of the world, it's still treated that way. They're still treated that way. Or for the Taliban, women aren't human beings. And so it justifies in their minds all kinds of horrendous, inhuman acts.
Yes, because we know if anything bothers the right, it's black people not being treated with respect, women not being treated with respect. They're forced to do all sorts of things. Oh, like what, Mark Levin? Are they forced to give birth against their will? I agree. That's unacceptable. Anyway, he's talking about what's justified by this dehumanizing. No, I'm going to flip it on you. Being fascist justifies identifying your movement as fascist. And he didn't even do that. He did a half measure, like in many things, Joe Biden. He called you semi-fascist. No, you are a fascist. Look, we've had interviews with scholars of fascism. We've been breaking this down for years. And there are all sorts of different ways to categorize and analyze whether a movement is fascist, what overlap it has with historic fascist parties. Maybe we'll do more of that in the near future. But I think Joe Biden is years late on making what seems like a fairly common sense necessary identification. And Mark Levin whining about dehumanizing and genocide and all that isn't gonna distract from the fact that it's an accurate evaluation.
It's crazy. So they don't want to talk about critical race theory in schools, but when it comes to dehumanization, Mark Levin can then point out and then say, "Oh, look, when they dehumanize you, that suddenly they're out to come kill you." We've been making that point for a very long time. As a matter of fact, you know who's dehumanized, as he did point out there? The enslaved folks in America. You notice he didn't want to point out how that was literally the founding of the country. Okay, so was it a genocidal country then when we dehumanized these humans so that we could force them to work, kill, maim, separate, and force them to build the country? Is that dehumanization? I think it was. Are we a genocidal country because of it, Mark? No, they skip by that part, but they actually don't want to teach their kids about that because they might put. Anyway, beyond that, Steve King talked about Mexicans that are potentially at the border. They have cantaloupe calves. That's dehumanization of them. They're just drug runners. They're mules. We hear those terms all the time. Also, Trump literally called folks that are migrants animals that are coming to the border. They call Barack and Michelle Obama monkeys and apes. Doesn't sound very human to me. Also, what did Hitler and those Nazis call all those Jewish folks that they absolutely killed? Talk about genocide. They didn't call them humans.
Yeah.
So as we're talking about how Joe Biden called you a semi-fascist, you know what fascists are? They're humans.
Yeah, that is notably not the best that, humans.
The only thing on all those lists that all these conservatives like to call folks, the only one that's a human are the fascists that they're denying and upset about now.
You're 100% right. They routinely call entire groups of people illegals. They're not people. They're not even like a noun. They're just a group of adjectives. They're characterized by the fact that I think they broke the law. That's the only thing you need to know about them. There's no other facts about them. It is so dehumanizing. But they're taking issue with they're freaking out about. So no, tomorrow we're going to evaluate the evidence for Joe Biden's claim. We're going to break it down on the show with Ben Glebe, actually. It wasn't that long ago, and I am old enough to remember when Lindsey Graham was predicting riots in the streets if Trump is prosecuted. This was Lindsey Graham in his "I'm a big boy, I can make big threats" mode. And he's talking about riots, he's predicting civil war. How dare you come after Donald Trump? And then he got a lot of criticism Because that's insane. That is encouraging violence. Certainly doesn't seem to have a problem with violence. And so he was criticized, including from Joe Biden. Listen to this.
By the way, no one expects politics to be a patty cake. It sometimes gets mean as hell. But the idea you turn on the television and see senior senators and congressmen saying, if such and such happens, there'll be blood in the street. Where the hell are we?
Well, unfortunately, where we're at is in America. But in America, where Lindsey Graham is doing a bit of backtracking. You know what he said. We played it on the show. We just showed it in that graphic. Take a look at how he tries to explain away the concerns.
Yeah, so what I said Sunday was America's reject, I reject violence, but I also reject a double standard here. So if they try to prosecute President Trump for mishandling classified information after the Clinton debacle, when she was Secretary of State, people in this country will lose faith in law enforcement.
Okay, lose faith in law enforcement is miles away from riot in the streets. And not only did you not say, I reject violence, but one of the worst things to say is, I reject violence, but, which you did say right there. You didn't say I reject violence a couple days ago. You predicted violence in the streets. But here you said, I reject violence, but something, something, Hillary and Bill. That's bad. You're not really rejecting violence if a little bit of whataboutism is all it takes to get you to a point where I reject it, but you know what? Sometimes necessary.
Insanity. Listen, so this is one of those things where I would love to heard how they tried to figure out how to backpedal correctly on this by still not giving up the point that you were trying to make so the MAGA won't be mad at you. And most importantly, that Donald Trump will not be mad at you for this. It doesn't really work. It just makes people talk about more of the stupid things that you said, by the way. So he starts by what I had said was this. They're going to lose faith in law enforcement is his new tweak of his point. They're going to lose faith in law enforcement. You know who lost faith in law enforcement? All those folks who got to protesting during 2020. In fact, they had lost faith in law enforcement decades before that. They've been pointing it out over and over and over again. Now, Lindsey Graham is concerned about people in America losing faith in law enforcement, but for Donald Trump, not because they're murdering people in the streets, not because they indiscriminately shoot black and brown people at higher rates than anyone else, not because of the incarceration rate and judges and the judicial system and all of it stacked up against certain people, not because of any of that, because of Donald Trump. And by the way, once people told you how fed up they were with law enforcement and how things need to be different in the country and they took to the streets, you know what Lindsey Graham said? That they're criminals, arrest them, what's wrong with them? Everything that they're grieving about is actually not true. How much does he really care about people losing faith in law enforcement? Or is it just certain people that look a certain way and follow a certain politician? That's his point.
Yeah, it doesn't care if they lose faith. Yeah, no, they'll lose faith if a rich guy who definitely committed the crimes and definitely knew that he was breaking the law and definitely tried to cover it up, if he suffers any consequences, then they'll lose faith. That's madness. Okay, with that, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna get ready for C block. We're ready to go. I'm gonna do a little bit of intro here. A little bit of good news in the labor front. That is that American support for labor unions is at the highest point it's been in 57 years. 71% of Americans now approve of labor unions, up from last year's 68%, a nice little jump, and it was getting high anyway. Union support is also up from 64% before the COVID-19 pandemic. It is the highest that has been polled since 1965, and it is not difficult to figure out why that is. There have been a number of almost miraculous victories for the labor movement. There's been some great politicians supporting that movement and amazing activists becoming leaders inside of it. And I was actually lucky enough to talk with one of them yesterday. Chris Small is president of the Amazon Labor Union. We broke down his work against Amazon as well as in a number of other areas. Take a listen to that now.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Glad to have you here. And while we're talking about appreciation, I appreciate what you've been doing for the movement over the past few years in logging some historic wins, notably, of course, against Amazon. One of the biggest corporations in the history of the planet finally facing this credible labor movement. And already successes there, of course, as has been covered so much. I know we're going to go broader and talk about your work, you know, across the movement, but where does the effort stand when it comes to Amazon right now? Are we going to be seeing more successful unionizations there?
Absolutely, of course. You know, we started something that's not never going to go away. You know, we're going to have campaigns and elections all across the nation, just like Starbucks. We just filed for another election this past week in Albany upstate. And, you know, we're not going to stop there. You know, we're organizing other facilities right now as we speak. And just like Starbucks, we want to be one of the most powerful unions in the country one day. You know, we want to have representation of Amazon workers and protect workers all across the nation.
Yeah, it's obviously needed. I mean, like the nation has learned a lot over like throughout the pandemic about how mistreated workers at Amazon are. And at the same time, like we went into the pandemic with Amazon workers being so necessary for so much economic output. And that's only gotten bigger during the pandemic. Like there's a case to be made that they are among the most abused workers in terms of what they contribute and what they get in response. So, you know, really want to see that. What I'd like to find out from you is, I know that because some of these efforts have been so high profile, some people might be for the first time learning how these corporations try to stop it from happening, the ways that they try to dissuade workers from organizing. Is there anything that people might not know about that corporations do to try to pressure workers not to unionize, try to hamper it, that sort of thing?
Well, the most alarming thing is that these corporations break the law every day. You know, by firing workers, they're breaking the law on purpose. They know that the NLRB process takes forever. They know that these laws in this country are weak. They take advantage of that and they fire workers, they retaliate against them. Especially if they're pro-union, they put a target on them. They demonize workers and they ruin people's lives. You know, literally, they make sure that, you know, you can't get hired at another job because, you know, something's on your resume that has workplace violence or something that they have fired you for just because they made up a story. And this is happening with Amazon workers and Starbucks workers. Retaliation seems to be something of the norm for these corporations because they continue to get away with it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, obviously you can attest to the individual retaliation. You have corporations literally shutting down branches. Here in Southern California, there were multiple grocery stores shut down when they started talking about unionization. And the deck is totally stacked against, like, despite the fact that what they're doing is illegal, it seems impossible to actually have them face any consequences for it. Are there any prospects for changing that, sort of changing the battlefield? How do we get the law to actually be held against these major corporations?
It starts with our elected officials as well. You know, we got to hold them accountable. You know, everybody's screaming out that they're pro-labor, pro-union, but they're not really standing up for workers. And they're not really putting their pen on paper and where their mouth is. You know, it's always, you know, let's stand in solidarity when the movement is buzzing. But behind closed doors, you know, the laws are not being made to protect us. You know, we have to push this administration, especially now that Biden's claiming to be the most pro-union president ever. We have to make sure that he's held accountable to that, you know. And it doesn't start at the top, it starts from the bottom. And it starts with our city officials, our local politicians as well. They have to be on the picket lines, on the front lines. They have to make sure that these corporations are held accountable and put out bills and pass bills that's going to protect workers immediately.
You know, I was really curious to find out what you thought about these politicians. There's not many, but the ones that do actually show support, that do show up. I wondered, you know, could it be considered sort of a distraction in some cases? But you're saying that it is helpful to have those politicians. Are there any that go beyond just, you know, the words or maybe a photo op? Are there people that you consider to be actual allies to the movement that are in elected office right now?
I mean, yeah, this is a few, but you know, they have to do a lot more. You know, I definitely support Bernie and how Bernie supported us, vice versa. respect the fact that he's shown up for us on several occasions, and he continued to, you know, to communicate with us and you know, lend that solidarity out whenever we need it. But you know, it once again, it's a lot more that not just him, but a lot of politicians, especially on the left, that can be done for these workers, and it hasn't been done yet. And once again, we're running out of time. 2024 is around the corner, and yeah, it's still a lot of work to be done. And we don't have that much of a window of opportunity to get it done. So for us as organizers on the ground, we're the ones that have to push these politicians into pretty much doing their jobs.
Yeah, I want to turn in a moment to one of the things you're about to start to do to use this window. But why do you think it is that some of these politicians aren't doing more with their time? Are they afraid of being seen as being anti-corporate? Are they too disconnected from the movement to even understand where they could be a part of it that would be helpful? Why aren't we seeing them actually going out there and engaging with the movement more?
Well, it's a number of things, you know. Yeah, there's a disconnect. Of course there is. And a lot of these politicians, we all know, they got their hands tied with these corporations. They're taking money, they're taking perks, whatever little backdoor deals they're getting from these corporations. You know, that's the problem right there. They're using them as sponsors, they're donating to their campaigns. You know, Amazon is lobbying. They've been lobbying in DC ever since we left the White House. So all of these things are taking place, you know, and it's not including workers. Workers are not included in these conversations, and that's the problem that we're having. You know, we have to put an end to that, and we have to call it out. Every time we see it or every time we hear about it, you know, we have to call it out so that the public know that these corporations are buying off politicians, and that's not a, it's not a good thing.
I agree. Yeah, can't be reminded enough. Well, we're right on the precipice of Labor Day, and apparently it's going to be a hot one. Hot Labor Day summer march. You want to tell us about the event?
Oh yeah, definitely. We're trying to bring back the real fire and labor in New York City, especially for Labor Day. You know, I love the fact that you know, everybody's showing up, from Starbucks workers, Trader Joe's. The fashion industry, you know, different industries from across the country are flying in and traveling in ever since we went public with it. And I'm just, you know, proud of the Amazon Labor Union for being the catalyst for all of this, as far as buzzing, as far as the Labor Day and Hot Labor Summer. So New York City, we're gonna march with some billionaires, you know, on Labor Day. We're gonna start at Howard Schultz, Sergeant Schultz. And then we go to march to Jeff Bezos, which we've been several times. We've done that in the last few years. And then we're going to end off in Times Square, the heart of capitalism. Have some really good speakers there, really powerful stories from workers from all across the country. And some prominent people will be in attendance as well.
Okay, I love to see it. I wish I could be there, but no. I love that you're keeping the spotlight on this. That people know that this is something they can get involved in. Like a lot of people, maybe they feel like there's big barriers to it, but we've seen these movements start and have success. It doesn't take necessarily that long. And there's people who can help. I know you have been involved in helping workers at a lot of different corporations with this, and having leaders like that is so important to let people know that this is. Is not just something that they got to read about in the news, that they can get involved and it can come to a corporation that they're at. And so, you know, all the credit in the world to you and the people you work with and the work that you do, Chris. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And yeah, the fight continues, you know, solidarity forever. Appreciate it.
And of course, that event that Chris talked about is coming up in just the next couple of days. So be on the lookout for that. With that said, we do have to go to another break. We'll be back with more news after this. Okay, let's jump
John,
into
you
this.
Messed up. Everybody go bomb Burbank's page and tell the John is pronouncing her new show.
You're causing so much trouble for me. It isn't true. Anyway, it isn't true. They were considering it, but I gave the thumbs down. And if one person vetoes it, it ain't happening. This is like Rome, and I am Commodus. Anyway, okay, let's talk about some news. When we talk about politicians that are encouraging political violence, it's because we fear what people will actually do. And the one step that comes before actually acting on it is the threats, and the threats are coming. You're seeing Representative Eric Swalwell, a staffer for the representative, fielded a phone call that was as threatening as you can imagine. They said that an unidentified man went on a rant regarding gay issues, using homophobic slurs a number of times, and asked for Swalwell's current location, which thankfully the intern didn't know, so couldn't provide. I'm kidding. No, that's crazy. But they thought, I'm gonna call up an office, I'm gonna use all these slurs, threaten to kill a guy, and then ask for his location. You're gonna give it to me, and then I'm gonna go kill him. Absolute madness. But he put out a statement about this as well, saying a staffer of mine who's 1 month into her job received a call from a man saying he's coming to her office with an assault rifle to kill me. I hesitate to share this, but how else do I tell you we're in violent times and the architects are Trump and McCarthy. Bloodshed is coming. And you can see if we bring up this next thing, they're gonna have a bit of a transcript from, and it was incredibly violent. And it's not the first time, it ain't gonna be the last. He got a message just 2 weeks ago, a racist, homophobic voicemail from a Trump supporter who vocally supported the mutilation and beheading of Swalwell, his wife, and his family. That is according to TMZ. So look, this is why we're against them encouraging this, talking about riots in the streets, talking about people needing to do something. All too often, this is what they choose to do.
That's the only answer left. They talk about the violence of the left and the anger, and look how they don't let you even have your freedoms and speak. Oh, how Christian they are as well. These are the Christian folks. These are the folks who follow God, who follow Jesus, and the love and the positivities of his teachings, right? To resort immediately to violence. Who resort immediately to saying you're gonna come kill someone, behead them, mutilate them, because that's what Jesus would want, right? Or then you have people like Lindsey Graham, which he's going to keep getting over and over and over again, despite how much he wants to halfway backpedal about it. He's pushing this same thing over and over and over again. We saw what happened with January 6th. If you think it was something that you want to blame on someone else because it was so bad, why do you keep saying the same types of things yet again?
Yeah.
I think they think the game is going to keep going that way, and they can keep blaming it on Antifa and BLM. But then say, riots are going to be in the streets if you do anything to offend Republicans. How does that work? You're calling your supporters rioters and violent political activists. That's just what they are. I didn't say it, you said it.
They said it. Yeah, when we talk about we spent, feels like forever, saying Joe Biden, cancel student debt. We didn't often say, or else we're gonna burn this place down. And not even like, I don't even support it, but like, I know what these lefties are like. If you don't cancel student loan debt, they're gonna burn the entire country. We would never, ever say that because we know our side, we know who they are, and we know who they're not, and they're not that. But they know their side, they know how violent it is, and they know that they can stoke that fire a little bit and for their own purposes.
And they also know. Go ahead.
Continue.
No, they also know that no matter what, libs, progressives, whatever, Democrats, they're also Americans too. And yes, guns are being compiled all over the place. And when these conflicts and these confrontations happen, there'll be response. We've seen it. Some folks, again, that's why they push Antifa so hard, because they're standing there armed many times and they're not taking it. So then you go for, look at these violent folks that you created this scenario. Either we mow through and kill you all, or you push back and we call you violent. That's the plan here. We already know that.
Yeah. Exactly. And look, it's not lost on me the fact that the dude was deciding to use homophobic slurs. We know what motivates these people. I mean, sure, it's ideological. They hate libs or commies or socialists or whatever they think Eric Swalwell of all people is. But we also know they are violently homophobic, and that has become a bigger and bigger part of right-wing thought. And so thankfully this guy hopefully will be tracked down. Hopefully he'll be stopped. Hopefully the next one will be too. But stay tuned. Okay, with that, unfortunately, that is all the time we have for our first hour of our show. Thank you, everyone in the audience. There's more to come, though, in the aftermath, including airdropped nudes, Truth Social's new issues, and they are piling up, as well as maybe the worst news for the American people that I've seen in some time. We'll get into all that and more after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.